So I'm speaking with Dick Bryan, who is Associate Professor of Political Economy at the University of Sydney. Is that right, Dick?
That's right, Cam.
Excellent. Dick, I wanted to speak to you today just about this impending financial crisis that we keep hearing about, and maybe try and debunk a little bit of some of the, well, from both sides of politics and the media, what is actually going on.
Gee, if only anyone actually knew what was going on, I guess we'd be a long way advanced on where we are. But look, Cam, I think a couple of key things to say. One is we're in uncharted waters, and that's both alarming because you'd like to think that people in the know, people who run banks, regulators, actually do know where things are going, or they've got a good idea about where the future lies. So that's one point that's contestable and alarming, that we don't know where they're going. The other, though, on the other side is, I think there's a bit of a danger. Everyone loves a crisis. You know, everyone loves a drama. And maybe that things aren't quite as bad as are often being talked up. So let's run through those two points here. The first one is really about saying that over the last 15 years, there's been a big bubble in financial markets. Asset prices, housing prices, share prices, all of those sorts of things have just kept climbing and climbing and climbing, and no one really knows why, except that there's been a whole lot of demand out there. But everyone's known there's been a bubble, and part of the definition of a bubble is that bubbles burst. What's really surprising is that when this one burst, everyone was so unprepared for it. And we found a few banks holding assets that have absolutely tumbled in value. So, in particular, those holding mortgage-backed securities, you know, they've had exposure to that US housing market, and also those that are holding some exposure to other companies' defaults. It's called credit risk, where you basically insure other companies against companies going broke.
So could you, I know this might be a little bit difficult to do, but could you put it down to a structural fault within that kind of neoclassical economic model, or is there something more to it? Is there corruption at play, or what kind of factors do you think have contributed to this beyond the ones that you've just mentioned?
Okay, look, first thing to say is I think it's fairly safe to assume no matter what location or time in history, there's usually some corruption out there. We almost take that as a given. Is it a flaw in the model? Look, it's got to be framed that way because, you know, the so-called deregulation, the liberalisation of financial markets that's occurred over the last 30 years has been extolled, has been paraded in terms of how efficient markets are. And clearly what we're finding here is that markets are not efficient. What it means is that the regulatory culture that was around that essentially said, leave things to the market, people pursuing profits will behave rationally and sensibly. Eventually it's been learnt that doesn't work. And in particular, we should have known, and some people some analysts have been saying for a long time, money and finance are always different from every other industry. Because you can let a car company go broke. Some people lose their jobs, but a car company goes broke, it's sort of okay. And you can apply that to, you know, a supermarket chain, to a whole lot of industries. There's some hardship, but the repercussions don't go on forever. But when a bank goes broke, people not only find that their savings and their financial assets are under threat, but finance relies on trust. That if it's a system where you've got to believe that balance sheet that the bank sends to you once a month, or when you go to the auto teller and it says you've got a certain amount of money in the bank, you've got to believe that will be honoured. And if people get the yips and say, gee, I'm not sure it'll be honoured, trust is on the line, this industry implodes.
And you see something like what happened in Argentina at the start of this century, I guess, the run on the banks. And is that the kind of situation that can result in that lack of confidence?
Yeah, look, I don't, and I think it's important to be clear here that it's the same cultural phenomenon. We haven't got to the point, and we won't get to the point, where individual savings in banks are under threat because we've got governments guaranteeing.
Sure.
But we are at the point where some major financial institutions managing financial assets, that they've done their dough, and then that flows through to a whole insecurity around financial markets. So banks finish up saying, we won't lend to each other. We don't trust the overnight cash rate. It's to lend to each other. That means then that banks can't, or financial institutions can't, meet their obligations. So it's actually not for us as the users of the high street banks that there's a crisis. That's not manifesting particularly for anyone. Even Northern Rock in England, the deposits are guaranteed. It's in the wholesale markets. It's in the relations between the big institutions that the panic set in. And that then flows down to us, because you find no one wants to buy shares, no one wants to hold this, no one wants to hold that. You can't get a loan. Your superannuation's falling in value because people have lost confidence.
Sure. So, well, that's sort of looking at, I guess, the micro elements of how this all works. The big picture, I don't know if you saw Bob Ellis's opinion piece on the ABC a couple of days ago, saying that, you know, the free markets never existed, and all this has basically shown that period of intense deregulation and, you know, economic rationalism, as we termed it in Australia, to be a fallacy, essentially, that there is a need for intervention and there is a need for regulation. Can you safely say that this is a turning point, I guess, in the structure of our market economy internationally?
It's certainly a turning point, although, and I didn't read the Bob Ellis op-ed. But,
it was very tongue-in-cheek, as I'm sure you can imagine.
I have no doubt about that. But I understand the argument that's being made. Look, it's a turning point, but I wouldn't quite frame it in those terms. I'm of the view, in relation to finance, there never was what we would call deregulation. I mean, if you look at how many people are employed in regulating the Australian financial system, just to take a part of it, it is massively more than there were in the 1970s. You know, you've got the Reserve Bank, APRA, ASIC, and they've all expanded massively in numbers because finance has become so much more complex. Mm-hmm. So there has always been regulation. But the real problem is, and it goes back to, you know, the nationalisation of banks issues, that the state always has to underwrite the finance system for the reasons I was mentioning earlier, that it relies on confidence. So we were pretending there was competition. We were pretending that that market forces were at work, but they never really were. These financial institutions always had the implicit assurance that if they messed up, the state would bail them out, because if the state doesn't bail them out, ordinary innocent people get hurt, governments get voted out of office, and the whole legitimacy of the economic system is at issue. So I think there was a bit of a playing of the game of the spruikers of free markets, that we had a free market system. But nonetheless, I think those people are now seen to have no clothes, and that's the turning point, that saying that we believe in competition within the financial sector and everyone benefits from competition, all that sort of stuff, that's clearly got to be out the window. On the other hand, you know, is the culture around that says, let's nationalise the finance system, let's run state banks that give guarantees that the private banks don't have, let's give some political assurance to these financial institutions. I don't actually yet see that any government will do that. So I think in policy terms, we're in a real limbo land where you and I and everyone else out there has the right to say this system is about fluff and the image of competition, but it doesn't really work on those terms. But what terms does it work on? We still don't know. I think that's, you know, that issues are still being about to be talked about there. It will be the big area of debate. How do you regulate a financial system in a way that doesn't mean the state just assumes control over finance?
So I guess moving onto the issue of the bailout, the $700 billion bailout. I've sort of, the two readings of the situation that I've come across are that on the one hand, it was kind of, there was this groundswell of popular opinion against these kind of, you know, the archetypal fat cat merchant bankers getting bailed out with the golden parachute. And on the other hand, it was kind of the deals just couldn't be done within the US House. If you could point in one direction or the other, I don't know if you can, could you say that it was a victory for people power, or is it just the politicking behind the scenes?
Yeah, look, it's a really curly one, and I really shouldn't claim to be an expert here, but I could see in the people power argument a couple of lines, and they're quite incompatible lines. One is the libertarian line, you know, the free market line that says, you know, I believe in markets. We should just let markets run their course. And if there's got to be a bit of pain, there's got to be a bit of pain, but things will recover because I'm a deep believer in markets, that sort of line. The other is that will come out of the left more, the more populist left, that says, well, why should we keep throwing money at organisations that have raked so much money out of ordinary people, out of their savings and their pension schemes by all their fees, etc., granted themselves huge salaries because they're posturing as being such skilled entrepreneurs, and it's turned out that they're really a pack of duds. So there's sort of an alliance between the left and the right, in a sense, that says we don't want to support big capital. Then on the other hand, of course, there's that little political battle that's going to go on in the context of an election, that's saying who is going to take the credit, not really for the bailout package, but for putting all the caveats into the bailout package. Who's going to be the one who says we have put the most responsible package together that makes sure, A, we bail out the banks, but B, we're not just writing blank checks for fat cats. So I think that's the little arm wrestle that's going on there. Personally, as a person on the left of politics, I'd say you just shake your head about how appalling it is. But the bottom line is there's got to be a bailout or there is going to be a major social and economic crisis. I might refer your listeners to one of my favourite country and western singers, a guy named Merle Haggard. If you Google him, it's Merle Haggard, and he sings country and western songs about financial markets. And he's got one lovely little line where he says to Ben Bernanke, the head of the Federal Reserve, the working man gets hurt the worst if you don't help the rich ones first. And, you know, you sit there and you watch it and laugh, but you say, hey, it's absolutely right.
That's right. Yeah.
That's the nature of a capitalist economy, that the rich people have to get bailed out so that the poor people don't get hurt. And it's the structure of class power in a capitalist economy. And, you know, I think we should all be questioning the belief in an economy based on private property and based on competition, because what we're seeing played out right now in this bailout package is an inevitable and direct consequence of those social foundations.
So what would the alternative be if this bailout can't get up? Like, what is the alternative? Pretty much a crumbling of that financial system? Like, I can't myself fathom what the alternative is.
Look, I think to use a Margaret Thatcherism, there is no alternative.
Right.
There is going to be this posturing around because there's political positioning on Capitol Hill for who's going to be seen to be the kingmaker, etc. I mean, when you look at the first version of the package that the US Treasurer Paulson offered, it was, to be blunt, disgraceful. You know, that there would be no legal challenges, no retrospective evaluation, no controls on executive salaries, that this was basically a blank check. And when you see someone, the head of Treasury, who in a political crisis is basically saying, well, my first offer is no compromise, it's bucks for my mates, you've got to then start to say, this is really dirty politics, this is... Well, I'm not going to use the word corruption because that could be a bit libelous, but this is, shall we say, unfortunate. As it's got played out over the next week or so, you could say, look, you know, the Democrats and the people who dislike what's going on are knocking the vulgar edges off that. They're putting more restrictions and caveats in, but it's got to go through because you just can't let big banks fail. And for those of us who are seeing, or particularly Americans, who are seeing their hard-earned tax dollars being allocated in this direction, I think the moral is, let's learn the deeper politics about what goes on here. What are the systems of accountability? What should we demand of accountability by those who are running a financial system? And particularly for those of us, you know, and that's all of us, who have superannuation, who are suddenly finding that our well-being in old age, we're suddenly told, well, it ain't going to be what you thought it was. There are deep demands should come for state commitments to guarantee old provision for old age. you know, having moved from the pension to the market, and the argument being everyone will win because the market keeps climbing, isn't it fabulous to be an old retired person because you just make all these profits? We're now seeing the downside, and the obligations that the state has sought to let go of to say, oh, the market will take care of this. We've got to be back in saying, no, the state must look after old people. It must look after people who are on pensions. It must give guarantees. And this idea of just leaving it to the market is appalling.
So it's as though Adam Smith's invisible hand's been cut off or something, maybe.
Well, I mean, if only we could say, you know, because it hasn't been cut off, but I think that the politics for those of us who are appalled is just now starting. Not to sit back and say, we told you so, we knew, nor to say, well, I dream of a society which is not based on competition, because I too dream of that society, but to say, how do you actually get in there and work the politics now and make the demands so that we don't find in 5 years' time that 2008 was just seen as, well, a little glitch, a little aberration, but it's all plain sailing now. Because, I mean, that happened after the Asian financial crisis. You know, it happened in the mid-1970s. It's always, everyone wants to talk regulation and there will be a new era of supervision. They talk that in the midst of the crisis, and as soon as the crisis is over, that discussion just falls
business
away.
Business as usual, yeah.
We've got to make sure it stays front and centre in the policy agenda.
Okay. I'm going to have to leave it there, Dick. Thank you very much for your time.
Hey, it's a pleasure, Cam. You got me fired up.
Good. Good luck with the meeting.
Hey, thanks. See you
later. Take
care. Bye-bye.